This is a production of Cornell University.
Okay, everyone. So the time is now 4:48. We have 25 members present. I'm officially calling this meeting to order. Just as a reminder before we get started, it's a bit hard to hear today, so make sure anytime you're speaking into the mic, especially because we have some voting members on Zoom today. I am going to begin with the land acknowledgement. Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Gaigano, the Cayuga Nation. The Gaigano are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of the Gaigano dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of Gaigano people past and present to these lands and waters. Okay, I'm gonna begin with late additions to the agenda. Oh, Representative Valencia.
So it should have been on the agenda, but it's Resolution 35 and it's the student activity fee for 2022-2024.
It's on the second agenda.
Does it need to be on but the it has to be presented at this one.
Okay. Do we have a second to that? Perfect. Any dissent to that? Amazing. Okay, so we're going to put Resolution 35 after 34. Any other additions? Representative Katie?
I can't decide where in this it would make more sense. My assumption is somewhere in business of the day, likely towards the end of the meeting. But there's two possible nominations to the Office of Ethics. It's just kind of depending on when they show up tonight. Recognizing the fact that it would be very helpful for the structure of this committee if we can actually add more than just one staff member to it. I'd like to motion that we add in, I think business of the day makes the most sense, these nominations.
So I think it would have to be new business.
Oh yeah, I guess that works too. Sorry, but either way, this is not even the voting. This is just the presentation of the candidates. So it would just be tabled until break.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm gonna put it above Resolution Number 34. If you're okay with that. Can we have a second for that? And any dissent to that? Okay. Any other late additions? Okay, perfect. So now we are going to move into our consent agenda and go into approval of minutes for the November 18th meeting. Highly smell upon a motion.
Motion to.
Oh. Representative Overton.
Motion to approve the minutes by unanimous consent.
Second. Any dissent to that? Perfect. Those minutes are approved. Okay, now we will move into open microphone. So anyone in the gallery who would like to say anything to the student assembly or has any or who has any comments for us, you can speak now and go up to that microphone. Okay, thank you. Announcements and reports. So we do have an announcement from Liz Davis Frost, who's the graduate and professional student elected trustee. She is not here yet. She was estimated to come around 5:00, so I'd smile upon a motion to just move her down on the agenda. Representative Katie.
A motion to amend the agenda to move down free period product initiative.
Perfect. I'm going to put it loosely after maybe the second byline report, and then maybe just smile upon a motion to pull it up if we need it later. Do you have a second to that?
Yeah, well, I'm
okay, perfect. Representative Yan, did you have something?
Oh, I was just going to second that.
Perfect, thank you. Representative Katie?
This is a separate announcement report, if that's all right. Yeah. Hey, everyone. So we had another university assembly meeting this past Tuesday when everyone was in their fun first hour of the appropriations committee, or the appropriations meeting, excuse me. What we brought up was UAR3, which is the one I mentioned in actually in the minutes for what was in, I think, last meeting or two meetings ago. Essentially, it's a resolution focused on sustainability in sustainability infrastructure on campus, specifically looking at waste receptacles. It looks to expand Cornell's current participation with what's called like smart garbage. We actually have one on campus. And essentially what it does is it adds, it's gonna start adding more waste receptacles around campus and these more sustainable waste receptacles that have these like solar panel, I forget the name, sorry, solar panels on the roof that can detect when they're full, which saves the university inevitably fossil fuels and going and driving around to each individual one. Uses sensors and different like Wi-Fi capability technology to like make a smarter network of it that allows university facilities to be more efficient with that. The full resolution has been changed actually by the UA Committee on Infrastructure, Technology, and Environment. So the one that was presented at the UA has actually already been amended. And I'd be more than happy with sharing it with any of you, as well as I could put it in the box or something, put it in Slack if anyone's interested. Right now it is in that committee after being presented initially on the floor. And it's, I think, gonna be brought up in the next UA committee meeting after the break to be voted on. And I'd love if anyone has any questions or is interested in getting involved with that, just reach out, let me know.
Perfect, thank you, Representative Templeman.
Yeah, I'm gonna make this super quick, but today there was a meeting of the Committee of Academic Policies and Programs of the Faculty Senate, and we talked about the potential of adding a part-time bachelor's degree program, which would primarily serve like people who weren't able to go to college or just they have a couple of different target populations in mind. And while a lot of professors were in favor of the concept, there were some issues with potential issues with implementation, like if there weren't enough TAs, and also just currently the proposal has a lot of online instruction, which we know like isn't necessarily the ideal form of instruction. So if you, I don't know, want to hear more, have something you want the faculty to know, just yeah, contact me.
Representative Williams.
I guess just to bounce off of Claire, today the University Assembly Codes and Judicial Committee met. President Anunya and I were there. No huge updates with it, just that we are going to be amending our bylaws, the purpose of the committee, and there should be some interesting stuff to bring to you guys in the spring.
Representative Gleiberman.
I was just curious about, if I remember correctly, there was an amendment that passed in our bylaws about attendance for ex officios. I was just wondering when that was coming into effect.
I might give it, oh, yes. Pardon.
I would just say that as of right now, to my understanding, whatever the current version is on the SA governing documents page on the Office of the Assemblies is the one that is enforced right now. It depends on whether, and again, this is, if I can remember right, whether when they go through the process and get approved through either POLIC or the Office of the Assemblies, I forget which, but whichever is on that website is the most current, is the one that's enforced right now, if that helps.
I'll just say that I have that marked. I'll look into it and get back to you. I'll just message them in the Slack. And then I would smile upon a motion to bring back up pre-period product initiatives. Representative Katie.
Motion to amend the agenda to move pre-period product initiative to the first point of announcements and reports.
Perfect. Any dissent to that? Amazing. Okay, then we could introduce Liz Davis Frost, who's the graduate and professional student elected trustee. just kidding. Okay, we can give you guys a minute too. Yep. And Liz is going to be talking to us today about the free period product initiative. Can someone give Liz one of their microphones?
Hey, everyone.
All right, let me figure out how to situate myself.
Thanks for letting me come today. As Annalie said, I'm Liz. I use she, her pronouns. I'm the graduate and professional student elected trustee. For those of you who don't know me, I was here from 2016 to 2020 as an undergrad and then stayed for grad school because I had no other options as I graduated into a pandemic. And part of the reason actually that I wanted to stay was because I've been working on this initiative since I was a sophomore 2017-2018 school year. And so I've just like wanted to see it come to fruition and get some permanent funding. And we've had a pretty tumultuous time. So yeah, sharing some history, wanted to get some input from all of you, also presenting at all of the other four assemblies. Part of the reason that I reached out to all the assemblies to give a presentation was because this program initially launched as a pilot program. Actually, I'll just go through the slides. Okay, so the agenda, talk a little bit about the importance of free period products, the benefits to Cornell, the history of the initiative from the pilot in 2017, like I mentioned, to when the program rolled out fall 2020, our hopes for the future. And then if anyone has any insights or questions, would be down to answer any of those or hear any of those suggestions. Okay, so why free period products? Addressing period poverty, equity, and gender justice. So period poverty, for people who are not familiar, essentially these products are really, really expensive and they are not super accessible. And so just as Cornell, again, has this any person, any study mantra and likes to or tries to address issues of socioeconomic inequality, this is another issue or topic that falls under that purview. Also equity, the products are currently in all bathrooms in academic buildings with adequate counter space. Equity is important because not all who menstruate are women and not all women menstruate. So we want to make sure that these products are available for anybody who needs them in any circumstance and in any place. And then gender justice more broadly, I guess kind of tying those two last points together. This is a quote from someone at Columbia. I don't get to choose to have my period, and this means that I must access the necessary products and services to manage through my menstrual cycle, but access does not transcend equally nor equitably across different levels of income, counties, ages, gender, and race. I remember not being able to buy pads because our family only had enough money to buy milk or to fill up the car tank. Sometimes I would rely on toilet paper, which wasn't sufficient. So I would leak through my pants during school and miss class time trying to clean the stain. So this is not the only story of having similar experiences. There's a lot of research about these three topics as they relate to menstruation and those who menstruate. So if anybody wants any resources on that, please let me know. I'll send them to you. Okay, so what are the benefits for Cornell? I kind of went over this at the beginning. Reduces barriers for economically marginalized grad and undergraduate students. And to take this a little bit further, and I'll touch on this a little bit later in the presentation, we also see from our Qualtrics survey data that it's not just undergraduate and graduate students using these products. It's across the board, faculty, staff, and also guests. Step closer to this, any person, any study, regardless of identities held, and also a chance to be among the leaders on this issue in the Ivy League. So currently, Columbia, I think they launched their pilot program in 2015 or something like that, and then 3 years later, it was funded by their institution. We also have like countries like Sweden and states like California who have these products free in all of their schools and places. And it's also a movement that's happening in the corporate world. You'll see a lot of businesses and entities with these free products in all of their bathrooms as well. So I know that we often hear that Cornell wants to be a world-class leader, 21st century university, or model for that. And this is, in my opinion, and in a lot of other people's opinion, one of the things that can help us get to that point a little bit more. Okay, so history of Free the Tampon. So like I said at the beginning, there was a spring 2017 pilot. It was a collaboration between the Women's Resource Center, the Student Assembly, and facilities. And so at this point, there was a Student Assembly resolution that came out, early 2017. That it was called Free the Tampon. Free the Tampon. If you Google it, there's like a picture of Justin Bieber, like with a sign that says, "Do you want free tampons on campus?" Blah, blah. This pilot program only lasted for 2 months. It was completely paid for by the Women's Resource Center with support from the Student Assembly. Paid for by the WRC, and then just like promotion and marketing support by the Student Assembly and facilities. And then the program, so that was when my freshman spring. And the people who spearheaded this initiative in 2017 were all juniors. And then their senior year, when they ran out of money in 2 months, because it was a small fund, the program kind of fell through the cracks. And so when the, what was it, fall 2018, so my junior fall, in collaboration with people like Savannah Lim and Joe Anderson, we kind of started having the conversations about revamping this initiative. Again, in the original pilot program, the products were only in 9 academic buildings and only in women's restrooms. So clearly we wanted to expand the reach, the bandwidth of the program. And we recognized that in order to do that, we would need a substantially larger amount of money. And so that is when we, the Student Assembly Infrastructure Committee Fund, SAIFC, whatever, gave us, that was like their project for the 2019-2020 school year. And so we spent a year having conversations with the Office of Assemblies, community partners, different like organizations, and we were going to launch this program on LOL March 12th, 2020, and then we all got told to leave. So Liz was sad. And then I decided to come back for grad school, LOL. And so we printed like all of the flyers. Like, I mean, if you go into the bathrooms and you've seen these products, you see that they're in a basket, you see they're in signage, there's signage there. All of that was ready to go March 12th, 2020. I get the email and they're like, okay, so we're gonna do this. And I was like, yeah, send it. And they were like, no. So we then launched in the fall of 2020. The money that we got from the SAIFC was $70,000. And so if people are interested in the breakdown of what we spent money on, it was equally across in this first purchase was we had to buy the baskets that they're in, the flyers, pads, tampons. We used Lola, which is a sustainable brand, and got a pretty good deal with them in partnership with the support we have with the facilities people. And then because we launched in the pandemic and there weren't as many people on campus, that $70,000 lasted us longer than it would have if we would have launched in a regular school year. So the pandemic kind of served as a silver lining for us in that manner. But that 70K recently ran out like at the beginning, like within 2 months of like this school year, right? And so then GJAC, the Gender Justice Advocacy Coalition, which was formerly known as the Women's Resource Center Executive Board, graciously gave us a little bit more money to last throughout this semester. And they also gave us more money to try to make it through the spring semester. But in all honesty, I'm not sure if that will happen. The first pot of money that they gave us already ran out like within 2 months because so many people are on campus now. And so fingers are crossed that we don't run out of money for products next semester. With the new money, let me make sure I'm not skipping over. Okay, I already did that. So in our second round of purchasing that we did like halfway through, we did a second round of purchasing in like March of this year. So spring 21. And we, on the flyers, there's like a Qualtrics survey that like, so we're tracking like where these products are used, so like and who's using them. So like I said, used across the board, faculty, staff, students, and visitors. And we also like have like a, if there's anything else like you'd like to add portion. And so someone suggested panty liners. So we included panty liners in the second round of purchasing. And then we also got a lot of feedback from people on Twitter and just like in the additional comments portion of the Qualtrics saying that the term menstruation was not gendered and we made it gendered by adding an X in the term. And so that was like some really constructive feedback that we really appreciated. And so we recently just redesigned all of our signage and sent like the new flyers to facilities to print again. So those should be coming out soon. And so, yeah, that's kind of where we're at. They continue to be available in all academic buildings, but we want to eventually expand to residential and administrative buildings. And then we also want to move the funding from the student activities fee. So like I said, the 70K came from the SAIFC, and then this GJAC funding is also, like GJAC is a byline funded organization, so it's all coming from the student activities fee. In my head, it doesn't make sense for this undergraduate student activities fee, especially like me being a grad student right now. It doesn't make sense for the undergraduate student activities fee to be paying for this initiative when it's being used by everybody on campus and people who aren't on campus. And so like, I would love if somehow the university could find a way to fund this. However, now in my trustee position, and since I've been here for so long, I've talked to literally every person that I could talk to. And the issue is, it's a weird dissonance, right? Because everybody I've talked to has said like, we love this program. We would love to support it. There's just no money. So that's like, I asked if it could be in the capital campaign. I talked to the president. I talked to Lombardi. I talked to Cornell Health. I talked to facilities. I talked to alumni affairs and development. Like all of the senior administration knows that this project exists. And they all say, this is great. We love it. Good job. Go y'all. Sorry, there's no money in the bank. That can be allocated to this. And it's not, we don't think it should be funded. It's more so like, there's a lot of deferred maintenance. The pandemic was difficult financially. There are a lot of different areas of campus trying to get funding and increase their budgets, et cetera, et cetera. So hopes for the future. For immediate future, we hope that we can somehow find some money to at least last through the spring semester. I'm not kidding when we say the moment we run out of funding, like these products are going to be pulled and they're not going to be in bathrooms anymore. And my fear is, and also because this has been like a completely student run initiative from the jump, which is something that I think people have been a little confused about. There was recently a Cornell Sun article like that framed the initiative as if Cornell was paying for it. And that is the furthest from the truth. I would love it if that were true. But also again, because it's a student run initiative, like once I leave in May, and once the people who are currently working on it, who are also seniors, leave in May, somebody's going to have to pick it back up, build all the connections, and do everything I did for the past 5 years again. And like, that's doesn't sound fun. I could tell you it wasn't. It was like fine, but you know, it's not something that I think it would be like the third time that we like started this initiative from the ground up. And so that's not something that we want to happen. And so the goal again is to establish permanent funding in one of these ways. So I think short term, like middle term, I guess, like 2 to 5 years maybe, through collaboration with the assembly. So I envision like if every assembly said that we can give X amount of money, we could probably have enough, like every year we could probably have enough money to like sustain it for a little bit. Long term, if we solicited a $2 million endowment, that would appreciate in value so that it could sustain itself for forever. That would be ideal. However, again, there's so many demands for funds across the university, across all of the campuses. And so it's just, we just had a hard time. So that's where we're at right now. My goal, again, in talking to all of the assemblies is to just gather support again and also build momentum for the initiative. I think the reason that it was successful in 2017 was because there was this student assembly resolution, there were petitions and stuff like that. And so I think if we want to put pressure on the university, want to put pressure on like different entities and donors to think that this is important and recognize the importance by backing their mouths with their pocketbooks, we have to have like momentum on campus across the university. Also, the thought process behind talking to all of the assemblies is because, again, like since this initiative has been completely student run, right, the turnover rate for students is every 4 years. So we need community partners who are going to be here for the long term, who aren't students, who are also working jobs and being on e-boards and trying to complete a full coursework to push this through, and also just like have leverage and stake in different communities. And then again, like the more people that know about this initiative and know its history and hopes for the future, the better. So what we've learned, again, menstruation isn't a gender term, and also that the products are, that the products are used equally across campus. And so, yeah, if anybody has any questions, comments, concerns, here to answer them.
I'll just start by saying thank you so much for coming, Liz. I know that this has been a project you've been passionate about for literally over 5 years. Work that I think the campus really appreciates. Representative Williams.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, like, thank you so much for coming in. Like, I've really appreciated this resource, and I know a lot of my peers have. I guess I just had like a quick question. Would you be interested in maybe looking into special projects funding to give you guys a little bit more boost for the spring? Do you think, like, would you be in favor of working on a resolution for that?
Yeah, so I think that's the avenue that we're going right now. I think we want to try to get resolutions and support from all of the assemblies so that it shows administration and the board that this is something that everybody is passionate about and thinks that should be a resource here on campus. But I also can't apply for SA Special Projects Fund because I am a graduate student. So I would have to talk to the undergrad partners about that. But I think they're down.
Representative Gleiberman.
I want to thank you first for coming today and explaining. I know I've had a lot of questions about like who's funding this thing. It's like if you're SAIFC, if you're GJEC, if you're SA. So I really appreciate your presentation. One idea I had, especially in possibly building the fund, and I know this might sound a little radical. So we've been going through a byline process right now, and we've seen orgs with up to $200,000 in rollover, and a lot of them have been talking about we want to do increased activities, increase our presence. And I think this could be a great opportunity maybe in order to get some collaboration, possibly ask byline orgs to give a small amount of the rollover, which a lot of these orgs have, because that could really help make a dent in building this. And also it would be a great way for the Cornell community to come together and say like, look, a lot of these orgs have unused funds during COVID. Yes, we could all use them to kind of put our own individual activities on, but we could also like band together and do this really big project that could benefit everyone for years and years and years to come.
Mm-hmm. Great idea, thank you. I think we've, the GJEC executive board has talked about that a little bit. So definitely in the works or in the the word thought process. I don't know. Yes, I hear you. Thank you.
Representative Katie.
Hi there, Liz. Thanks for presenting all this. This is really incredible. I've obviously heard a lot about some of these programs, and it's been great to see the work done so far with it. So I'm happy if there's any way the Student Assembly can continue that work. I'm kind of curious, just like if we can talk a little bit more about kind of two questions. First, more about like specifics. I believe it was 70,000 was the initial investment. That included buying the baskets, printing the first signs, getting the first things. But obviously, it sounds like the signs have changed. We obviously don't need to replace the baskets. I'm wondering if there's a specific annual operating cost we have right now.
Or, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'd just love to hear some more of the like specific numbers around that, if possible.
Yes. So that's been a challenge in the past, just because we launched during the pandemic. So even though we have like data from the Qualtrics survey, we can't like do an accurate like this is how many products we're going to use in a year. Thus, this is how much money we need.
Okay.
But I think at the end of this semester, Liz is not a girl in STEM, so Liz will ask somebody to figure that out for her. But yeah, so I mean, I can give. I can give you like if you're interested in like how our original purchase.
Anything you have, I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah. So the first purchase that we did, we got 1,000. I'm just gonna share screen again because.
Yeah. Could you also put those in? Or give them access to Wendy's so you can put them in the box.
Yeah.
So you
can
also refer to it back. I'd really appreciate that. Thank you.
Am I still in the Zoom? Yeah. Hold on, let me find it. Okay, share screen. Okay, so this is just my speaker's notes, but you'll see we spent nearly 30K in the first round of purchasing. So that was 1,728 baskets, and we only have to buy those once, and unless they like get messed up and then we replace them. That was. And then the pads, if you can divide 9590 by 140, that's how many pads we bought. I can find the like concrete numbers and send them to Wendy, but I just can't do mental math off the top of my head. And then we had to buy tape to put the signs on the baskets. And then the signage was like, $4,000, and so we just had to spend another $4,000 to reprint new signs after we got the feedback about the unnecessary gendered X. So it like every time we do like a new round of purchasing, we're spending like 30K.
That sounds great. And then I'd love to also ask about the Qualtrics survey.
Sorry, we still have people.
Okay.
Oh, and then go back to what you asked. So there are some universities that are saying like they spend like 200K on this a year. Some are saying like 100K. I think we are in like the between 100-120K. So that's where the $2 million comes from. With the 2%, it would be like 100K a year. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you.
Liz, we have a Zoom question for you from Amari Lampert, who's also an SA representative.
Yeah.
She said, could you ask her if she would like more seed funding from SAIFC until there is a more permanent solution? She helped the old chair with a little bit of the initial fund for SAIFC and have all of the old documents for that.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm not going to say no to anybody saying we're going to give you money. So if anybody else's question is, would you like money from the SA? The answer is going to be yes. I just can't apply for it because, again, grad student, but I can coordinate with the GJAC people and get on that.
Representative
Jing. Hi, Liz. Hi. Thank you very much for coming here. And first of all, we really appreciate the work you have done. It's fantastic. And you previously mentioned that you have reached out to universities regarding to get their fundings, and they say their banks are running low. In my opinion, this is quite sort of absurd. Response to you, because the university endowment just increased by $3 billion, even though the economy is not doing good. So, and also, I know a lot of the SA members, including myself, is currently proposing that we're asking the universities to essentially give more financial support to the works that the SA needs to be done to fund programs such as yours.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want like to put analogies. For example, if the government trying to do something that's beneficiary that we agree, but we need to raise taxes, instead of raising taxes for those who make billions or 3 billion in this case, is we are raising taxes on students who are probably lose their jobs or facing financial difficulties. So my question to you and more of asking is that if in the future the SA members proposing bills to pressure universities to ask them to provide direct financial resources to the student assembly, would you be willing to cooperating with the SA members in the university side to negotiate with the university regarding with the financial support resources to the SA? Thank you.
Thanks for that question. I would say kinda. I love all of the support from the student assembly, but like I said in the presentation, like I don't think the undergraduate student activities fee should be paying for this whole project. So I say kind of, because if again, like there were resolutions from all five assemblies, right? And every assembly said, hey, we wanna give money towards this, like for the rest of eternity. Is that, that's weird to say, not eternity, whatever. For like a long period of time, and we wanna like pressure you to push towards like the university funding this. If it came from everybody, I would be down for that. But like the undergraduate student, like student population needs money for other stuff too. Like I'm not trying to say like give all your extra funding to free period products, because I'm like very aware that there are so many other initiatives that are also great and worthy of funds and pressuring the university to fund them. But I think specifically because this initiative is used by everybody on campus, and people who aren't affiliated with Cornell, that it needs to come from not just undergraduate students.
Okay, I'm gonna take these last two questions. Sorry, I cannot see your last name. Song, okay, Representative Song.
This is actually just purely a comment. I am absolutely blown away by the work that you and your team do. I'm so immeasurably grateful. I, as well as many of my friends, have utilized your services. Every single time we come into this room for a meeting, I stare at that banner that says, I would found an institution where any person can participate in any study, right? And on that sense, we need to pursue not only equality, but equity. And that's exactly what you've all been doing, and I'm in full support of your initiative.
Oh, well, thanks. I like your earrings, too.
Representative Katie.
I hate to follow that message of such great support. I do agree with it completely, though. That was really beautiful. Thank you, Michelle. I was just wondering if we have any data on the Qualtrics survey, as well as if we have a general sense of how broad these products are used. Because I know you're scheduled to speak in front of the University Assembly at some point next semester. I'm really excited to see how we could move forward about possibly getting other entities involved in this process. I'm just wondering if we have any sort of ideas about the populations besides just undergraduate students who are using it so far. Because I know, again, it's probably the same issue with COVID, that there's some sort of, you know, misdata of it, but I'd love to hear anything you have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're used equally across the board from faculty, staff, students, and visitors.
Awesome.
And I think actually at one point during the pandemic, they were used more by faculty and staff than students. But find someone smarter than me to analyze that data.
Yeah, just whatever you have, I'd love if we could put it in the box and just get access to go over it again, because I think it's a great project. I'd just love to learn more about it. So thank you.
For sure.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Liz. I'm going to share your contact information with everyone else, because I know that we have like a lot of questions around and stuff like that. For anyone who wants to contact Liz, thank you for your incredible work and for coming to speak with us today.
Thanks, friends. Have a fun rest of your meeting.
Okay, next on our agenda, we have the byline announcement from VP Valencia. And everyone, since we're doing byline stuff, can pull out your laptops for that.
Hi, everyone. Today we will be hearing from 6 byline reports. Up first, we're going to have the Cornell Club Sports, Sports Council. So just as a summary, they requested $22 and the Appropriations Committee recommended $22. And Patrick is here if y'all have any questions. And yeah, I'll open it up to like whatever.
Representative Williams.
Hi, yeah, I have a quick question. I mean, maybe Patrick would better answer this. So my question is just kind of, how did you guys come to the $22 number? And is this going to be sufficient to club fund your program? Will you be, you think, are you expecting to use it fully or do you need more?
Sure, so I'll spare you all the math, although I think I can share it if I,
are we allowed to share it?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the sort of short of the math is if you were to do how much money club sports take from SAFC for the past 3 years, we take about 25% of all SAFC funding, which comes out to 3581. So the number we should have asked for was 3581 if we want a direct amount. We believe that a combination of, one, taking the burden off SAFC and having Club Sports Council use its own dozen commissioners will make us more efficient and that we won't give out more money than is necessary, which is why we think we can get away with the number being lower. Two, we think we can get away with the number being lower because there's a lot of orgs we're starting to condense. For example, there's 8 Frisbee teams. There's like 4 different variations of golf. Like, we're planning to condense club sports a little more, and just overall, we think we're going to save a lot of money. And so we asked for 22 because we think that's the bare minimum we can get away with. And you know, take as little money from the activities fee as possible. But if you take all the math out, like the way it works is club sports currently get all the money from SAFC. And if they don't have enough money, we can't hold them to not apply to SAFC for more money without the proper allotment. So why we're asking for 22.
Representative Smith.
Yeah, I guess since you're here, Patrick, might as well take advantage of asking you questions. Yeah, no, and so just curious if you can speak to generally how the Club Sports Council is going to approach suddenly managing this huge chunk of change, I guess, right? So I imagine it is a big transition. So if there's just kind of a general sense of what that's going to look like now that there's a ton of money to manage internally.
Yep. So the first thing is all executive officers of all club sports are automatically enrolled into a general body of club sports. All members of club sports are within the council, but all officers of club sports are required to, in a sense, do whatever we say. Part of that is like relating to safety trainings and concussions and insurance things. Other part of it is like D&I trainings. And we've asked at the moment 30 treasurers to step up to be commissioners. And we're looking to get 15 for 100 club sports, which we expect to condense to 90 by the start of the next SAFC signing. So starting in fall 22, we're expecting to have about 90 club sports, and then we're expecting to have about 15 commissioners. And so I am here to sort of oversee. I will be the first to admit that I am not the money person, like in terms of actually allotting everything, but it's my goal to hire people who know exactly how to do that. And we've already started. And once the allotment's all set and done, we'll hire the commissioners officially, and I know the SAFC chairs aren't here, but they're going to shadow the SAFC commissioners for the rest of the spring, and then they're going to be given their own specific guidelines about how do you do club sports as well.
It's now on a motion for voting. On a motion to vote. Representative Templeman. Second. Okay, amazing. Can I have all those in favor, please raise your placard. Okay, all those opposed? All those abstaining? Okay, 2 people did not vote because we have 24 people here. Oh. Okay, yeah, so that puts us at 10. So can you check those changes in? Thank you. And if you can hear me, if you're on Zoom, can you message Joseph your votes for everything we're voting on today? Yes, for both. Okay. In a vote of 22-0-2, that passes. Congratulations.
Thank you all. Appreciate it.
Okay. Now we can move on to Cornell Interfaith Council. So as a like a summary, they received $3.75 last byline cycle. This cycle, they asked for $7, and the committee recommended $7. And yeah, I'll open it up to any discussion, any questions.
Representative Gleiberman? No? Okay. Representative Templeman? Was that just a motion? Motion to vote? Okay, amazing. Any dissent to that? Perfect. Can I have all those in favor raise your placards? All those opposed? All those abstaining? In a vote of 20-1-2, that passes. Congratulations.
Okay, and now we can move on to Alana. So again, as a summary, they received $15 in the last byline cycle. For this cycle, they requested $20 and the committee recommended $20. And yeah, I'll open it up to any questions, discussion.
Representative
Lango. I mean, I think we talked about this last week, so motion, or on Tuesday, so motion to vote on Alana's budget.
Any dissent to that? Okay. Can I have all those in favor, please raise your placards? All those opposed? All those abstaining? Okay, and a vote of 19-2-2, that passes. Congratulations.
Okay, so now we can move on to the Orientation Steering Committee. In the last byline cycle, they received $10.40. For this cycle, they requested $11, and the committee recommended $11, so a 60-cent increase. And yeah, that's Orientation Steering Committee.
Representative Templeman. Okay. And just as like a point, just make sure to use your microphone so they can hear something. No worries. Any dissent to that? Okay. Can I have all those in favor, please raise your placards. All those opposed? All those abstaining? Amazing. And a vote of 21-0-2, that passes. Congratulations.
Okay, so now we have the International Students Union. In the last byline cycle, they got $4.81. For this cycle, they requested $7, and the committee recommended $7.
Representative Templeman.
Motion to vote on this allocation.
Perfect. Do I have any dissent to that? Can I have all those in favor raise your placards? All those opposed? All those abstaining? In a vote of 22-0-2, that passes. Congratulations.
Okay. And lastly, we have SAFC. So in the last filing cycle, they received $137.91. For this cycle on paper, they also requested the same amount. However, when they came to present to the committee, they stated how they actually requested $112.66. And you see an asterisk right there because according to the SA Charter, the student activity fee has to be an integer. So we have to round up SAFC's allocation to make it an integer. So their actual allocation would be $113.10, which is a 44-cent increase from what we voted on. But yes.
Representative Smith.
Yeah, so I guess I kind of put it out there last time, but more directly, I'm just curious, how much less money is SAFC going to manage in the future, like beyond this? Like, you have a sense of that? Like, how much smaller are we going to see SAFC become? I don't know if that was a part of the discussions now, because like, that's the thing that's in my mind is like, we're the money's going under different headings essentially than SAFC, but yeah, like, is SAFC going to be relevant and for how much longer?
Yeah, so they're still like in the process of like talking it out, right? They want to do like a separate committee with like all the a cappella groups and things like that, but they didn't give us any other numbers, right? But right now they're given like 39% of the overall student activity fee, so a little bit higher than the 35% on the SA Charter. But yeah, so right now they haven't given us like numbers or like exact figures about how much smaller they wish to go. Does that answer the question? Yeah. Okay.
Representative Gleiberman.
Yeah, this isn't so much about SAFC, it's kind of what I brought up on Tuesday moving forward. I just think it's becoming increasingly harder to see where a need for money is because so many of the councils requested increased funding and got that, which is great, but a lot of the clubs that also get funding from a lot of these councils, I'm not talking about Interfaith, MGFC, just like the two umbrella ones are also getting money like from that and SAFC. So I guess I'm just concerned about with all of the other increases that we're given, like how we're gonna be able to accurately really kind of see the need for where funding needs to go. Cause I feel like we've done some consolidating, we've also spread money out more in my opinion. That's just like a thinking point that I think we should be thinking about. That wasn't necessarily a question to you.
Okay, I would smile upon a motion. Representative Lango.
Motion to vote on the Appropriation Committee's recommendation.
Any dissent to that? Amazing. Can I have all those in favor, please raise your placards. Okay, all those opposed? Do we have anyone opposed? Okay, all those abstaining? Amazing, and a vote of 23-0-2, that passes, congratulations.
And those are all the filing reports, yay.
Congratulations. Okay, so now we can move into initiatives. presentations and forums. Business of the day. Okay, and now we are in new business. We have two nominations on the floor from Representative Katie.
Yeah, I hope you can
Can you use the microphone?
I don't know if Andrew and Pedro's nomination is still going to be able to make it here tonight. I guess, oh, no? Okay, so then we only have one, and they're not here yet. So I motion to move it after Resolution 34 and 35, and if we have time, if they show up in time, we can do it then.
Second. Any dissent to that? Okay. Now we will hear Resolution number 34. Calling on Cornell to eliminate legacy preference in admissions and the co-sponsors.
Point of information, Ed, I think we should renumber these because we had a Resolution 34, which is currently indefinitely tabled, which was presented.
Sorry, we can't hear you over here.
Sorry. Yeah, I'm also like getting attacked by wind or something. I think we had a Resolution 34 that was previously recorded and it's indefinitely tabled. So I think we need to amend to have this be Resolution 35 and then Resolution 36. If I'm not mistaken, we have a Resolution 34 that is currently standing as indefinitely tabled.
I'm looking in the Office of Assembly saying we don't have Resolution number
34. Valeria's resolution. Charter, and we never considered it on the floor, but it was presented and put on the agenda.
I'm gonna pause for a quick second so we can just like, Lucas, do you know where you saw the Resolution 34 in the past?
Yeah, that would have been the 18th.
On the 18th meeting?
Correct.
Okay. Perfect. I'm going to look in the box right now.
I was just going to say that resolution never made it to the floor, but it was put on the box and on the agenda.
Is it? Yeah. It's this resolution?
Sorry, just point of information. So the resolution 34 that was on the agenda on the 18th never made it to the floor because you guys ran out of the meeting was adjourned. So it wasn't even brought up to the floor, introduced or anything.
Right, but it's still part of the record, right? Because it was formally added to the agenda. So technically it's reflected in the minutes and things like that, right? So that we have to hold that resolution 34 for that. Technically, the resolution is fair game, per se, and it was just indefinitely tabled, so.
Well, the purpose of that resolution was to extend, you guys just completely defeated the purpose of even having that resolution because it was to extend the deadline for the SAF, all that stuff, but since you just voted on everything, there's not a reason for having it. We can do that. We can renumber it, and that's something
yeah.
I do after.
Okay. I'll just say, do you guys have anything against renumbering?
No.
Okay. So we're gonna make this resolution number 35, and then the resolution after it, it'll be resolution number 36, just so that you guys aren't confused. Okay. So now formally, resolution number 35 is calling on Cornell to eliminate legacy preference admission.
Okay. So, yeah, hello, everyone. Basically, this is what it sounds like, calling on Cornell to eliminate the legacy preference, which is currently one of its many policies in its college admissions process. I've been passionate about this issue for a while. I briefly worked with an outside org last year on trying to pressure administrations to get rid of legacy admissions. And I find that there are a lot of misconceptions people have about this system. First of all, it's very relatively new. Most of legacy like policies have started in like the 1920s in response to a lot of increased xenophobia. It was specifically meant to target Jewish students and second generation immigrant students who obviously wouldn't have legacy status at these universities. So it has all these anti-Semitic and pretty xenophobic roots. And also it's uniquely American. I mean, I mentioned here in terms of peer institutions like Oxford and Cambridge, but Canada, UK, the rest of the world, this sort of legacy preference, like if you wanted to admit someone based on where the parents went to college, you'd be laughed out of the room. So also, yeah, so in general, like another sort of misconception I know people have is people think it has more of a marginal effect on who actually gets admitted, but it has a big effect on helping the university build up its budget. But I've actually just researching this issue, I found it's usually the opposite. Like it has more of a marginal, if any, minimal effect on university budgets, but it can have a huge effect on who has, like who is accepted. Like for instance, in Johns Hopkins, they basically ended the process in 2014, but they didn't announce that they had ended it until 2020. And they found that the percentage of admitted students in their incoming class who were Pell Grant eligible jumped from 9% to 19%. So this would have a huge impact on increasing things like racial and socioeconomic diversity in the incoming class, as well as just making an admissions process more fair. And again, I guess another thing to stress is that I don't think anyone or any of my co-sponsors have anything against legacy students. Like if you want to attend the same university as your parents, that's great. It's just about like if you're a legacy student, you should be judged on the same criteria as everyone else. Yeah, so does anyone else have anything you want to say? Go ahead.
I guess I just really want to quickly commend our co-sponsor here. Some of this research is actually really fascinating. It challenged some of my own notions. I thought that this did increase funding, but alumni equally do donate to the university, whether legacies or not. Additionally, I found that it was interesting that a lot of our peer institutions don't. I mean, Cornell is a leader in many different fields and in making some of these big changes. And of course, we have nothing against legacy students. I want to reemphasize that. A lot of my friends are. But along with being legacy students won't lose all advantages. Many of them will have a family structure where they are encouraged to work diligently and can still get into this university on their own merit. And this is not going to prevent them, but this is going to give everybody a truly equal opportunity. If we want to say every person, every study, we need to truly mean it, especially this Pell Grant statistic from Johns Hopkins University. I'm from Maryland. There's a lot of socioeconomic diversity. It's incredible how much this jumped just by taking away legacy. So I'd just like to additionally say that this is a really important resolution and I hope you all vote to approve it. Thank you.
I'm going to open it up to questions and comments. Representative Santa Cruz.
Hello. Thank you for the resolution. I guess I'm curious to know how, like when you submit an application and you say like, oh, my parent went to this school, how is that kind of utilized in the admission application process? Like, is it like, oh, okay, we're gonna put this student in this pile? Or like, if you know, I'm just curious.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, well, first of all, when you submit your application, you have to put down also where your parents went to college. So they all know like where your family went to college, that sort of thing. And the official statements that Cornell has given has stated it's more of a tiebreaker sort of situation. So if they're deciding between two students and one is a legacy, they'll go with that. But I mean, I personally have reasons to be skeptical of that fact, because legacy students are admitted at a much greater rate than non-legacy students. And like just, like I think it's at Cornell, legacy students make up about 16% of the incoming class. Meanwhile, at Johns Hopkins, after they got rid of the legacy preference admissions, it now legacy students are about like 3% of the incoming class. And while obviously Johns Hopkins is not a perfect comparison, I wouldn't be surprised if statistics would be similar in that case. And again, like a lot of studies have shown that legacy preferences do crowd out more worthy students who might just not have the background. You know, I think that when you're admitting students, I think you shouldn't be based off of where your parents went to college. It should be based off of how good of a student you are and how dedicated you would be.
Thank you. Representative Smith.
Yeah, so appreciate bringing this resolution. Yeah, so very interesting on the impact on alumni giving rates. Like, that stands out to me. It's a 2010 study, so hopefully there's more stuff out there. But anyway, I guess getting to the point of my question, how this looks to the administration right now and making sure that like the appearance to alumni isn't problematic or whatnot is like super key, considering the whole like capital campaign that was just launched, right? So yeah, I don't know. So we've got one 2010 study that says that the impact on alumni giving rates is not there. I'm curious if there's more, because I guess in terms of where this goes after this assembly considers it, I can see a very, very, very quick rejection based on the fact that we're in an ambitious capital raising campaign aimed on reducing costs. So if having an ability for people to check legacy on an application for Cornell somehow means something for alumni because their kids or whatnot have maybe just some more consideration, that I could see them being very against this kind of thing. So tying in the two things there, we're in a capital campaign. Is there more beyond this 2010 study that tells us that alumni donations aren't affected?
Yeah, no, those are completely fair points. Obviously, I'd love, you know, more research to be done on this topic. I mean, that's all I could find just from a lot of just going through like Google Scholar and stuff. But I have a couple of points that I'd want to like point to. I know, first of all, there has been a recent movement where some alumni, especially young alumni, have stated that they would boycott donating to the university until they got rid of this legacy policy. Obviously, while I can't really give any specific statistics on that, I'm pretty sure there was a news piece about that. So it could potentially even start to hurt them if they continue keeping this policy. And also, I know other schools that have gotten rid of the legacy preference have, like in Amherst's recent announcement, they stated, along with getting rid of their legacy preference, they also would commit millions of dollars to supporting first-gen low-income students. So it just shows that you can do both, I guess. But I still, like, if there is a reason the administration, they previously claimed that they maintain this policy to build a community. It's really about, it really comes down to the money. And I guess also just one last thing I'd want to say is that Cornell could find itself in a very, like, if they choose to get rid of legacy admissions, they'd be historically setting a huge precedent to be the first Ivy League to get rid of this policy, to be one of the first in peer groups to get rid of this policy. It could be, you know, Cornell prides itself on, again, as one of the previous speakers mentioned, being a 21st century university, any person, any study. And I feel like having a policy like this, or getting rid of a policy like this, would be in accordance with its mission.
Representative Wan.
Yeah, so I just wanted to, add an additional comment in support of this resolution. With regards to worrying about alumni donations and in the capital campaign we are in, I think one of the biggest things that we also have to, that we can kind of think about is the fact that Cornell, you know, they're talking about committing X amount of, I forget exact amount of dollars to, you know, increasing financial aid and all this stuff. And I think this is a great opportunity for Cornell, like you said, Representative Templeman, to, you know, set that bar high where it is amongst other Ivy Leagues, and then also have that opportunity to actually use it as a fundraising mechanism and say, hey guys, we're setting this standard to erase legacy emissions from being the first one in the Ivy League. And that's a great opportunity for maybe alumni to maybe say they're proud of that, because I feel that, you know, a lot of people might, you know, have expressed concerns about legacy admissions in the past. And this would be a great like win for that in that sense. So I think it could be great for a fundraising effort too, if we really want to combine that.
Yeah, no, that's well said. I guess just one other thing I want to add is that, again, like many other universities such as MIT, for instance, has never used this policy, and they still have thriving alumni communities, and they clearly have a very large endowment to support their students. So yeah, that's what I'd want to say.
Okay, I know a lot of people want to comment on this, so I'm gonna revert to a 30-second speaking time and then 40-second responses.
Can I also
Representative Gleiberman?
Sorry. This isn't a question so much as just a comment. From my understanding, and again, it's always hard to figure out any of the submission stuff, but it is my, based on what I know, Cornell only considers legacy status in early decision applicants. They do not factor it in as like a boost or anything in a regular decision. I remember hearing this in information sessions when I was applying. I've heard other people who've heard this from admissions counselors. It's hard to know.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah. Thank you.
I just like to respond. So I got into this university early decision, and there's a lot of different factors that can play into early decision, and the majority of the class does come from it, and it becomes more competitive in the spring when such things as legacy might not be considered. I think that legacy is just another way of like tweaking the class in a way that is unfair for students. If I apply like in the fall versus in the spring, that doesn't change how you are as a student. So I think no matter when they consider it, it still drastically will affect what the student body ends up being.
Thank you. Representative Mullen.
Yeah, I would just like to second that and just say that I don't think we should really be considering the ongoing fundraising campaign right now. I think the evidence is very clear that this is an obsolete practice. It entrenches the sort of elite of the American society within Ivy League and other higher institutions such as Cornell. So I think its abolition would be a huge step forward, and it would be a very smart move. You know, my only comment, I guess, would just be, I hope that there's continuing effort after this. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you. Like, definitely, this is only the first step to starting a conversation about changing this policy. And I guess another thing I wanted to say about the early decision thing is, currently in its incoming class, Cornell University has a higher rate of legacy students compared to even other Ivies. Like, it's around 16%. I'm not totally sure about the numbers, so don't quote me that, but it's around 16% versus other Ivies, around 12 to 13%. So I really believe it would have a big impact, even if it's only used in early decision.
Very quick point on that. I also applied early decision. I remember the statistic very well. It was actually above 20% when I applied for the class of 2023. So again, early decision, huge impact.
Representative Song.
I remember being very impressed by this resolution when I heard it in the Academic Policy Committee meeting. I'm still impressed now. I wanted to, in addition to echoing Representative Juan's statements, add that legacy preferential admission is outdated. This is the type of policy in 50 years down the line, you're gonna say, why did we give preference to a student just because a guardian of theirs attended our school? So in that sense, I'm in full support of this resolution. Thank you.
Yeah, and just to quickly respond, something I wanted to hit on is, you know, if we get rid of this, along with the alumni donations, this is going to open it up to a whole section of students that might not have been chosen because they weren't legacies. And they're going to be just as grateful and passionate about this university as someone whose mom happened to go here. This could open up Cornell to affect more communities that we haven't reached, especially low-income communities, who might even be more excited to donate. So I don't think that money should be what we look at with this.
Thank you. Okay, everyone. We're like, I think in the middle of a storm, so it's pretty hard to hear in here. Can you, like, when you're talking, literally bring the microphone like to you? Just because I'm like keeping time and everything and can't hear anyone. Representative Santa Cruz.
Motion to vote.
Second. Amazing. Do you have any dissent to that? Awesome. Can I have all those in favor? Please raise your placards.
Ms. Placards, okay.
The
brings that up. Okay, can I have all of those opposed? Okay, in a vote of 22-1-1, that passes. Congratulations. What?
Thank you all.
Thank you. Oh, we have 24. You're right. Did someone not vote? Oh, I'm so sorry. I meant abstentions. Were you abstaining? Okay, sorry. In a vote of 22-1-2, that passes. Congratulations. Okay, now we're hearing resolution number 36. That was previously resolution number 35.
Just conferred briefly with the VPF there, but I motion to amend the agenda to bring forward the one nomination of Office of Ethics. I know we keep going back and forth, I'm so sorry. Just while we have Morel here, if people are comfortable with that.
Do you have a second to that? Any dissent to that? Okay. You can do the nomination.
Hey everyone, can you hear me? How about now?
It's gonna be like right here.
Yeah, I know we got the storm and now the clock tower. I know we've talked a lot about nominations office of the ethics. It's disappointing, it's kind of taken a while, but it's just the process of sometimes these things. Again, I invite everyone to put it forward, anyone they know, anyone who might be interested. This is a new office, this is new positions. So there isn't precedent here. So it's really an open door for opportunities for people to get involved in student assembly, for people to take their passion and channel it through shared governance. Joanne took advantage of that and reached out to me multiple times, about getting people in and working in the process. And I'm really impressed with everyone I got to talk to that process. And I'm really happy Morel's here today. Obviously her interest in the student assembly is very impressive, and I open the door for any questions you have about. Again, it's a new thing. Myself, Lucas, Morgan, anyone who co-signed that initial legislation is more than happy with talking about it. And I really look forward to, because they are on a deadline, putting forward any nominations they have. I know there were possible other ones that could come today, but keep looking. Look for people you know. Talk to people in your hall. You never know. That's the beauty of shared governance, is getting people involved. So I'll pass it over to either of you, if you have anything you want to say or speak to.
Can you guys hear me? Okay, great. Hi everyone, thank you so much for having me here. My name, as Duncan said, is Morel. I am a sophomore transfer to ILR, and some of you might know me from my essay run for transfer representative. During that time, I was able to meet Adele, who told me about this office, and make friends with Joanne, who was kind enough to tell me when the spot opened. So thank you for that. I guess just to talk a little bit about what I perceive as my qualifications for this position. So working backwards, I suppose, in high school, I served on my high school student council and wrote a constitution which was similar to the ethics document that we're going to be creating, or hopefully we'll be creating in the Office of Ethics. I have some experience with that. In senior year, I was also given a graduation award for philosophy for my commitment to ethics. For those of you who are in ILR, I'm taking Professor Gold's advanced ethics class, and that's going pretty well. And I'm currently working for Elizabeth Warren as a legislative intern, and I've done some work with her oversight team, and that has some ethics components in it as well. So if you can't tell, I'm super passionate about ethics in this office, and I would just love to answer any questions that you guys have.
Amazing, thank you so much. Are we voting today? It would be a table, correct?
I will open it to question and comment. Representative Baker. Second. Amazing. Can I have all those in favor of tabling? Please raise your placards. All right, all those opposed? Anyone yes. All those opposed, anyone abstaining? Did someone not vote or did someone leave? Someone left? Amazing, thank you. In a vote of 22-0-1, that is tabled. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, so now we will be seeing resolution number 36, which is previously resolution number 35. VP Valencia, is that in the box? Okay, that's in the box. You guys can pull out laptops and everything again.
Okay, so resolution 36 is the recommendation for the student activity fee for the 2022-2024 byline cycle. So if you scroll down to the actual resolution, you have all the number figures. And if you look at the kind of like appendix that's attached to it, you can see like the breakdown of each organization's allocation from the last byline cycle and this byline cycle. So the new activity, student activity fee would be $310, which is a $1 increase from $309 from the last byline cycle. So just as a summary, Alana will be getting $20, athletics $7.25, class council $7.40, club insurance $5.50, CRP $4.30, CPFB, $2, convocations, $18, Cornell Concert Commission, $13.56, CUPB, $13.56, Cornell Interfaith, $7, Cornell Minds Matter, $1.63, Cornell Sports Council, $22, CUEMS, $4.70, EARS, $1.60, CU Tonight, $8, ECO, $0.75, GJAC, $3.45, Haven, $4.40, ISU, $7, MPFC, $1, Orientation, $11, Outdoor Odyssey, $2, PFC, $0, so essentially off byline funding, the Student Assembly, $1.50, SAFC, $113.10, Students Helping Students, $5, Slope Day, $21, and the Willis Street Hall Student Union Board, $3.30. So adding all of that together gives you $310. And yeah, so like I mentioned, you can look at the appendix. It's under the final 2022-2024 student activity fee. And it has the breakdown from last year to this year and the percent change for every single org. And yeah, that is the SAF.
And just to clarify, we're tabling this meeting. Our next meeting for this evening, we'll be voting on this.
Yes, so we discuss it here and then we adjourn and then we vote on it after.
Perfect. Representative Williams.
Yeah, I guess point of information, just really quick. So I saw the little asterisk on the SAFC one that we had to round it to a round number. I'm wondering why the round number isn't just 113, why it's 113.10?
Yeah, so we round the overall student activity fee, the SAFC, that's kind of like what we move around to make it an integer.
Oh, okay, yeah. Thank you.
Representative Santa Cruz.
Motion to table.
Second, okay, can I have all those in favor of tabling? Can you raise your placards?
All those opposed? All those abstaining? Okay, and a vote of 20-1-2 that passes. Congratulations.
Tabled.
Yeah. Oh, that's tabled. I'd smile on a motion to adjourn. Representative Templeman? By unanimous consent. Do we have a second?
Second.
Oh, dissent? Oh, we have a dissent. Okay. So sorry, I'm blanking. You can voice your dissent.
Yeah, I have a motion to introduce.
A resolution?
No, just a motion.
A motion? Yeah. Okay. Do you retract your motion? Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to motion to introduce a motion of recall on the floor. I'd like to motion to recall the Vice President of External Affairs for failure to perform their duties in their position. Justification for that, I can present the facts. I don't know, do I do that now or?
Okay, so I'm not sure if that's a vote to do that.
No, it's a vote to hear that. That's a motion.
Okay, so yes, so you can present if you'd like to go up there, if you'd like to have a present here.
Everybody hear me? All right, we're introducing this motion of recall because the representative filling the position, Representative Lieberman.
Sorry, in the role, just as a point of order, can you raise the mic a little bit? It's a bit hard to hear.
Yep, like this? It works?
Yeah,
okay, cool. Representative Lieberman in the position has not been performing the duties as according to the standing rules of the student assembly. Those duties include chairing the Communications Committee, which until 2 days ago did not have membership and has not met once this entire semester. It includes arranging all social media and general advertising, which on an inconsistent basis has not been occurring. It includes sending the newsletter 2 times per semester, which has not happened once this entire semester. And it includes, as we tried to establish on Tuesday of this week, creating office hours and sending out the advertising for it, which did not happen this week, and thus we did not have office hours this week. I want to emphasize that this is not anything personal. I just think that we need to have a Vice President of External Affairs conduct the duties in that position. And in order to do that, it's become increasingly clear that we need to have a new Vice President of External Affairs. So I would urge representatives not to consider this a vote about one of their fellow SA members, but to consider it as a vote to fulfill this position, to fulfill its duties, which are integral to the student assembly, so that we can have proper functioning, we can engage with our constituents and the entire community on a proper and consistent basis, and so that we don't have to keep waiting for inconsistency and a lack of fulfilled duties. I'm open to any questions and any general comments.
Okay, VP Banta.
Quick question. This is a motion to recall her from her role, so she will still stay in the SA, but not leave the SA, it's just like from this executive board role?
That's correct. We would just elect a new Vice President of External Affairs.
Got it. Thanks.
Representative Williams.
Hi. I just really quickly wanted to say, I think I'm the only one here because I'm from Cal. That's a communication major. And I just, nothing against Annie. I've been pretty disappointed in the lack of any communication, especially when earlier in the semester, Representative Logan and I, when we had our resolutions, we shared around our own graphic on our own social medias, but there was not much posted on the SA account that we could use to promote the really important resolutions that were coming up to the floor. I think we do a lot of really important stuff here, and I wish that the students could understand it more by hearing about it more often. So I would be in favor of this recall.
Representative Smith.
Yeah, I guess just curious as well, since part of this is the committee function side of things. So also tying in, are the rest of our committees functional at like that differently, I guess? Like if all our other committees met, that kind of thing, you have a sense of that. Just looking at this piece by piece. So everything, every other committee is met, and so.
Yeah, just to update everyone on that, every other committee has had a meeting. They have their full membership. They have their chairs. The communications committee, to my knowledge, is the only committee that I have heard from that has not had a meeting because their membership was not established. It's still not updated on the Office of Assembly's website. We didn't even have it until 2 days ago. So it has not had a meeting, hasn't performed any functions or passed any resolutions, to my knowledge.
Representative Fernandez.
I was just wondering if there has been any outreach to this person, specifically the things that you brought up. If you could just share that. Thank you.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to go into all the details per se of private correspondence, but I will just say that there has been a consistent effort on my part, on the part of other members of the executive board, to reach out. And, you know, we have heard that there has been a difficulty in maintaining the duties of the office, which is why I think it's reasonable just to have a new external vice president if those duties are not being maintained. If from what we've heard from correspondence, it's become difficult to fulfill that role, I think it just makes sense to have a new vice president.
Representative Leon.
I just wanted to, I will say I do support this motion. I wanted to echo what Joseph said. It's not personal, it's about the job. I understand that this is a rough semester and we can't all meet all of the requirements of the job, but at least speaking for myself, if this is something that had been brought up openly, I would have been willing to help out wherever I could, to work wherever I could. And it's been pretty concerning to me to see instances where she has gone up and chaired ABSCOM meetings, but then again, like Joseph has been asking for her own committee list for months. It just is it's not personal. If you can't, if this is too much, that's completely fine. I think it's just holding up the process a lot of times and just for efficiency's sake.
Oh yeah, I agree with all of that. I would just add on to that earlier when we were having the fulfillment, the election to fill the vice president of finance position, there was actually a resignation from this position, which we then had a motion to, reappoint, which, just thinking back on that, it seems very strange that there was a willingness to resign from this position earlier in the semester. And then just to take back the role only to then not do the responsibilities of it for the rest of the semester. So I'm wondering whether, there's a real commitment to the responsibilities of this position as it pertains to the student assembly, or it's just having the role for the sake of having the role, which nothing wrong with that, but there's, preferably we can get someone who can fulfill the duties of the position.
Representative Overton.
I just have a point of personal inquiry is how I phrase it. Maybe this is for Joseph, maybe Morgan might be able to answer it, but I signed up for that committee, when I ran last year. Does that carry over? Because I just remember, because I was never contacted about it. So I'm just confused, am I on that committee still? Because it's I just didn't hear from Morgan or Annie about it, or Representative Baker, Representative Laborman about it. So I was just wondering if that rolls over, and if so, if anyone was contacted about maintaining their positions.
So I can answer that. I did not get the committee staffing until, like I said, until literally this week, 2 days ago. Representative Overton, you're not on the list. It was a very select group of people who were included on the list on the Google Sheet. It also hasn't been staffed on the website. So theoretically, if we can kind of reset this process, have a new vice president and maybe staff that committee in a more thorough way, get community members on the committee because we need to be engaging with our constituents as well, we can kind of reevaluate and actually set up a full membership, I think.
Vice President Vanza.
I just want to say that I've seen the level of commitment and effort
VP Glaberman has put into other committees and other things, like for example, the Appropriations Committee. And so I know that she's very well capable of being passionate or committed to a task. I don't know if the same passion applies to external specifically. And so I think that possibly this role should be for someone who can be as equally committed and passionate about the role to do the actual work. Because again, I've seen the amount of effort and commitment Representative or VP Glaberman has put into other committees. And I think the external committee itself deserves the same amount of commitment and passion for someone who's actually passionate about it.
Representative Grohmeyer.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening, everyone. I wanted to jump off VP's Vance's idea. Representative Glaberman is extremely committed to SA and everything, but I still think this like could serve kind of just like as a chance. Like, I don't know if we should really be going through this whole process of right at the end of the semester. Like, there's still time to rebuild over winter break, and it's just like, I don't want to see anything like jump up in an explosion and a Sun article and Reddit and who knows what, you know. I don't want SA to get any more bad press than we already get, and like, I think we could just, you know, give a chance and, you know, maybe set harder deadlines with how we got to do things in the future.
Yeah, I would just respond to that, that one of the functions of this role, according to the standing rules of the SA, is actually to engage with the Daily Sun and the different news sources on campus. You know, that has not been accomplished to my knowledge. So I think we've already lost a substantial amount of news coverage and potential, you know, positive coverage that we would have had this position been fulfilled and had the duties of it been conducted properly. I would also just say, I think we need to do this preferably at this meeting, because I think that we can take the winter break, have a new election, and have a new external vice president who can fulfill the duties, start building the committee up over the winter break so it's ready to go when next semester starts. I would prefer to do that now rather than postpone it to next semester.
Representative Katie.
I was actually gonna say this before Representative put up her thing, so I don't know if she's separate to say. I was gonna say, in the interest of time, either the current VP of Communications speaks up to any of this, or if we vote on a motion, because we only have 5 more minutes and we do also have to do the additional meeting afterwards. I would also like to echo the point made by Representative Grohmeyer about, you know, just trying to do this cordially. So yeah, I would like either to hear from the current VP of Communications, or we could do a motion, so, but I'm gonna leave it to someone else.
Representative Glaberman.
I mean, I think this is kind of stupid, I'll just say that. Like, Thursday for me, I am slightly offended that anyone would question my commitment to the SA in general, even external. I mean, I spent my whole summer, our account had been blocked from doing ads for a lot of years, and I went back and forth with like Instagram Help Center to like get us unblocked, and then every day would follow as many like Cornell students as I could before Instagram would block me, hopefully to like get people to follow back. It was hard because we had a lot of weeks where there weren't any resolutions, but I tried to follow the pattern that my amazing predecessor set of like posting recaps. And I've had meetings with Duncan about advertising for a specific event they do. And I mean, I'll also say that, like, this isn't to rain on anyone's parade. There are committees which are super important, and there are committees that don't really do anything. The Communications Committee has historically really just not done a lot of stuff. I accepted everyone who applied this cycle. It was like 4 SA members, and I've reached, and some of them have been helping out with a lot of stuff. Like, it's just not a super glamour, like, it's just not a whole lot of stuff to do. And I mean, if any other Communications Committee's members of previous years have, like, want to talk about like projects or really cool things they've done, I'd love to hear them. That's kind of based on what I know. I think there's a lot we have to do as an assembly to help our reputation on campus. And I don't think the VP XOps can just like magically fix it. I think we should really look at a lot of our actions as assembly members in here before we like run after the VP XOps for like not making everything we do look good, because sometimes it's messy. Yeah, that's, I can talk about more, but I really don't, like, people have specific questions, I'm happy to answer them, but I really don't think it's in a good interest of anyone's time to like hear me ramble on.
Thank you.
Everyone, I realize that we're done with the byline report, so please just make sure that like technology's away. I know I saw like some people texting, some people on laptops, stuff like that. I'm sorry, I was guilty too. I like forgot to keep it up, and I just want to make sure we're having a respectful conversation here. Representative Overton.
Again, I would just like to stress that this is not at all personal. You know, I don't want you to feel like that. But, like, I just want to like respectfully disagree. Like, one of the reasons I applied to the communications committee in the first place is because I would like to see more student engagement. I know it's hard when people are, you know, saying some things they do say, but it's like, it's just that I haven't seen like any posts like much like this semester. And like, I really would have liked to see, you know, again, like with what Representative Williams said about making their own graphic about resolution, like I'd really like to see more of that. And if you need help, then like maybe we could, if it's possible, like appoint someone or like have someone on a committee who's like there to like back you up as like a secondhand person, just so like if it's too overwhelming, because we're not questioning your dedication to the essay as a whole. It's just that like personally, again, it's like the reason like I applied, and like again, I'm unsure if it rolled over, but if it didn't, I'd be happy to reapply. But like I believe that there does need to be more communication. I believe that social media is a very powerful tool for that. So I would either like to see someone on the committee like kind of step up to like help you with all that stuff, or you know, find someone who has like the time and like kind of like believes in it more. Like again, it's just, it's not personal, like it's not a character attack, but like I just think that there should be more done with the communication side of things.
Representative Williams.
Yeah, with that, I think that, you know, when we heard your speeches this summer, I was excited to see when we heard everybody's speeches for internal elections this summer, I was excited to see hopefully some more invigoration in these community in these committees, because you know we're just coming off of a pandemic year and everything is really transitioning online. So with that comment, I would like to echo Duncan's motion to finally bring this to a vote. If that has to be a previous question vote.
So before we have that motion, your sentiments. I'd smell upon a motion to extend debate because it's 6:30. Representative Overton.
Motion to extend debate by
5 minutes.
Is that okay?
Whatever. Sure. That was, let's say 10 would be end early.
Okay. Do we have a second? Amazing. Can I have all those in favor of extending debate raise your hands or placards or whatever? Can I have all those opposed raise your placards? Can I have all those abstaining raise your placards? Okay, and a vote of 17-6-1, the meeting is extended by 10 minutes to 6:40. Okay, and then there was a motion on the floor.
Yeah. Yes, I motioned to vote, but does it have to be to vote to end debate? So yes. Both.
Yes, so it would be a vote to end debate. Second, okay. Can I have all those in favor raise your placards? Okay, can I have all those opposed raise your hand? Can I have all those abstaining raise your hands? Okay, in a vote of 21-2-1, we have ended debate, and so we're moving into voting. Yes, but speak in the microphone.
Point of personal privilege, probably directed at Carson. Is it possible to like appoint someone to help out Representative Lieberman on her committee? Like, if you know, like, you need, if she needs like additional help, kind of like running social media accounts, or is that no? I'm just curious. Like, I genuinely don't know.
I would just say that that's the point of a committee.
Usually, like, you have a chair or vice chair of your committee. But, I mean, I'm not against appointing someone from the student assembly. It's like, are you proposing, like, a co-chair?
Yes, actually. I didn't know if that was allowed, but if a co-chair is possible, like, I guess so.
That having a co-chair would require changing the bylaws. The bylaws, because it states that there's one vice president for that chairs it. So anyone on the committee can theoretically do that if the chair wants them to. But yeah, I hope that answers the question.
Okay, so we had a motion on the floor. Do we have a second to that motion? Oh, you know, I already second. Oh, okay, so we're in voting. Okay. So just so that everyone knows, we need 2/3 of the voting members of the student assembly for this to pass. I believe we have 29 voting members of the student assembly, which would mean 20 votes. Okay, can I have all those in favor? Please raise your placards. Can I have all those opposed raise your placards? Can I have all those abstaining raise your placards? Okay, sorry, can we do a revote? Can I have all those in favor raise your placards? And as a reminder, you can only vote once. Okay, can I have all those opposed raise your placards? And then can I have all those abstaining raise your placards? Did we add an additional member?
I also believe Deepak may have left a proxy vote, or I'm not sure.
I am counting the proxy.
That's awesome.
I have 26 right here. Do we have 26 people? It doesn't affect the vote, but I just want to make sure that it's accurate.
It might be me, because I don't think my votes were counted in previous votes, even though I've been here. So that's why I messaged my vote, too, in case it wasn't seen.
No, Dylan, I counted you. Right? We counted. Okay, that counted. Okay. Sorry, I'm just checking real quick. If you're a voting member of the student assembly, can you raise your hand? Okay, we're at 26. Perfect. Okay, so in a vote to of 14 to 11 to 1, that fails. Second. Was that by unanimous consent? Okay, perfect. Everyone, we have an 8-minute break to 6:45 when we'll have our next meeting. And as a reminder, this is a special meeting, so you need to be at the next meeting.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.